Today, we're digging into Jordan Peterson's 12 rules for life.
Right. And for this, we've got a Wikipedia summary and also these reading graphic summaries for each specific rule.
Yeah, those are helpful. Our mission here is basically to pull out the core ideas. You know, what are the main principles? And maybe see how relevant they might feel for finding, I guess, meaning and order in life today.
And it's interesting how Peterson pulls it all together. It's like grounded in his clinical psychology background, for sure. But then he layers in mythology, religion, personal stories, too. It's quite a blend.
It really is. And the underlying argument seems to be that, well, if you embrace these kinds of disciplined rules, you can maybe better handle life's suffering and build resilience.
Sort of confronting chaos with structure.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, let's jump into rule one. Stand up straight with your shoulders back. Sounds pretty straightforward on the surface.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
But like the summaries point out, it's literal, but it's also a metaphor, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's about accepting responsibility, facing life head on with your eyes open, not sort of shrinking away.
Okay, so that's the deeper meaning. And he uses that lobster analogy, which is quite famous now.
Ah, yes, the lobsters. The idea is that, you know, dominant lobsters, the winners, they have higher serotonin, they stand taller, straighter.
Right. And he connects that to humans, how our posture isn't just physical.
Exactly. It's a social signal. Standing tall can actually make you feel more confident, but it also changes how others perceive you, how they treat you.
So it can create this kind of upward spiral.
Kind of a virtuous cycle, yeah. You stand tall, feel better, people respond positively, which reinforces the feeling, and so on.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, rule two then. This one shifts inward. Treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping.
And this one, it seems to hit home for a lot of people. Because we often do take better care of others, don't we? Or even pets.
Yeah, the summaries mention things like people skipping their own prescriptions but being meticulous with their dog's medication.
Right. It's that paradox. So Peterson brings in this idea of balancing the light and dark within ourselves, the yin and yang concept.
Okay, explain that a bit more.
Well, it's about acknowledging both sides of yourself. You know, the orderly parts and the chaotic parts, the assertive and the receptive, integrating them.
I see.
And the rule urges you to extend the same compassion and, importantly, responsibility to yourself that you'd give to someone you care about.
Like asking, what would actually be good for me?
Precisely. Treating yourself with that level of care and seriousness.
Okay. Rule three then moves to our social world. Make friends with people who want the best for you. Seems like common sense, maybe.
It does, but it's powerful. You know that saying, you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with? That's kind of the idea here. The summaries really contrast those toxic, draining relationships with friendships that genuinely support your growth.
So it's not just avoiding the bad. It's actively seeking the good. People who maybe challenge you in a good way.
Exactly. People who hold you accountable, who are genuinely happy for your successes, and who push you constructively to be better. Not just tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah. It really makes you think about your own circle, doesn't it? Are they lifting you up or?
It's a really vital thing to consider. Yeah. Who are you choosing to share your life with?
All right. Rule four tackles comparison. Oh, boy. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. This feels incredibly relevant now.
Absolutely. With social media, it's constant comparison, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone's highlight reel.
Yeah. It can really make you feel inadequate.
So Peterson suggests this alternative. Self-benchmarking. Focus on your own trajectory. Are you a little better today than you were yesterday?
So it's about your own progress, your personal improvement, even if it's tiny.
Incremental improvement, exactly. Instead of looking sideways at someone else who seems light years ahead, you look back at your past self. It's a much healthier, more motivating comparison.
Yeah, that shift in focus seems crucial for, like, self-esteem.
Definitely. Keeps you focused on what you can control, your own actions and development.
Okay, rule five is about parenting. Do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. That phrasing can sound a bit harsh, maybe.
It can catch you off guard, yeah. But the core idea, based on the summaries, is really about teaching children social rules and boundaries consistently.
So it's contrasting with maybe overly permissive parenting, where kids don't learn limits.
Right. The source material suggests that a lack of clear boundaries might be linked to difficulties later on, like antisocial behavior. It argues that setting limits isn't mean, it's necessary.
It helps them learn self-discipline, social skills.
Exactly. So they can function well in the world, and frankly, so that they become people you genuinely respect and, yes, like being around as they grow up. It's about guidance.
Responsibility again, but towards shaping the next generation. Okay. Rule 6 brings it back to the individual. Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world.
This one's a direct call for personal accountability, isn't it?
Feels like it. Before you complain about the state of the world.
Look at your own life. Are things in order? The summaries mention practical stuff, like literally tidying your room, but also making amends for past mistakes, acknowledging your own flaws.
So clean up your own act first.
Pretty much. It's about building maybe moral authority. If you've taken responsibility for your own sphere, you're in a better position to engage with bigger issues.
Sort your own stuff out before trying to fix everyone else's.
Yeah, it implies that real change starts small, with the individual taking ownership.
Right. Now, Rule 7 gets into motivation. Pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. This tackles suffering head on.
Yeah, it acknowledges that life involves suffering. It's unavoidable. And because of that, it's tempting to just go for what's easy, right? Mm. Short-term pleasure, avoiding difficulty, that's expediency.
The quick fix.
Exactly. But Peterson argues we should aim higher. Seek long-term purpose, something meaningful, even if it requires sacrifice now.
So meaning versus happiness almost, or meaning provides a deeper kind of fulfillment.
That seems to be the idea. Enduring fulfillment and moral growth come from striving towards something worthwhile, not just chasing immediate gratification. Meaning helps you withstand the suffering.
Okay. Rule 8, tell the truth. Or at least don't lie. Seems fundamental.
It is, but the implications are huge. Dishonesty, even small white lies, they argue, corrodes your integrity. It also kind of warps your perception of reality and reality itself in a way.
How so?
Well, if you're constantly lying, you start living in a world built on falsehoods. You lose touch. The summaries stress aligning yourself with reality through truth, even when it's difficult or awkward.
So living authentically, your words matching your understanding of things.
Yeah. Striving for that congruence. It makes you wonder, you know, how often do we maybe shade the truth, avoid uncomfortable conversations?
And what's the cumulative effect of that?
Exactly. On ourselves, on our relationships, it's a powerful point.
Okay. Rule 9 is about listening. Assume that the person you are listening to might know something you don't. Good advice in today's world.
Definitely. It's about genuine, active listening. Being open to the idea that, hey, maybe this person has a point or a perspective or some information I lack.
Even if you disagree initially.
Especially then, perhaps. It's about approaching conversations with a degree of humility, a real curiosity to understand, not just waiting for your turn to talk or win the argument.
And that fosters learning, obviously, but also better relationships.
For sure. It builds bridges, helps solve problems collaboratively.
Yeah.
Much more productive than just talking past each other.
Right. Rule 10 focuses on language. Be precise in your speech. Why is that so important?
Well, the idea is that vague language often means vague thinking. If you can't articulate a problem clearly,
you probably don't understand it properly, and you can't fix it.
Exactly. Defining things precisely brings order out of chaos. It helps you pinpoint issues, and then you can actually develop targeted solutions.
And it prevents misunderstandings, too, presumably.
Yeah, clear language reduces ambiguity. It's about using words carefully as tools for clarity and effective action. It can even sharpen your own thinking as you try to be more precise.
Interesting. Okay, Rule 11 is maybe a bit unexpected. Do not bother children when they are skateboarding. It's not just about skateboards, is it?
No. It's using skateboarding as an example of voluntary risk-taking.
Oh, okay.
The rule is really defending the importance of letting kids, and maybe by extension ourselves, engage with challenges and manageable risks. Overprotection, trying to shield them from everything,
can actually make them more fragile, less capable.
That's the argument. Facing appropriate challenges, navigating a bit of danger, is how competence and confidence are built. It's necessary for healthy development.
So letting kids push their boundaries a bit helps them grow stronger.
Within reason, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, it challenges that impulse to wrap kids in cotton wool. Risk. Managed risk builds resilience.
Okay, last one. Rule 12. Pet a cat when you encounter one on the street. This feels different. Gentler.
It does. And it's often linked to Peterson's personal experience with his daughter's severe illness. It comes from a place of dealing with profound, uncontrollable suffering.
So what's the meaning behind petting the cat?
It's interpreted as a reminder to stay aware of the small moments of grace or beauty or connection that still exist, even when life is incredibly hard.
Like finding little pockets of light in the darkness.
Something like that, yeah. A brief respite. Acknowledging that even amidst suffering, there are these small good things. Appreciating them can help you endure.
It's about finding meaning even in simple present moments during tough times.
Exactly. Yeah. A reminder to stay open to those little bits of positive experience.
Wow. Okay, so stepping back from all 12, what are the big takeaways from this deep dive?
Well, you see these themes weaving through, right? Mm-hmm. The importance of discipline, habits, structure.
Right, and confronting suffering, not running from it.
Definitely. And then this constant emphasis on personal responsibility, on actively creating meaning in your life, rather than just waiting for it or expecting ease.
So it's a framework, really, a set of principles for trying to navigate life's messiness with maybe more courage and integrity.
I think that's a good way to put it. It's demanding some of it, but it offers a path toward purpose.
Okay, so that leads us to our final thought for you listening, reflecting on these 12 rules. Which one, if any, really jumps out at you right now? Which one resonates most strongly with your current situation? And importantly, why?
And maybe think, what's just one small thing, one tiny change you could maybe try based on that rule starting today?
Something to think about. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.